Welcome to the Reselling Podcast. Hopefully this is the first edition of many more to come. My name is Lawrence Stanley and I'm a full-time reseller. You can find me on all the usual socials if you can figure out how to spell my name correctly. So what's coming up in this podcast and the other episodes? So predominantly it's going to be tips and tricks on reselling, mostly in the UK. I know for a fact that there's a ton of good content out there in the States and other countries, but it doesn't really always play that well to UK listeners. Lots of things are extremely helpful, and it's nice to get an idea of how things work in other countries and areas of the world, but there are a lot of fundamentals, maybe not so fundamentals, but just logistical things that are different. For example, in the States, they have UPS. Sorry, not UPS. Whatever their national postal service is, we don't have that. We have Royal Mail and it works very differently. So any sort of packaging and shipping tips are sort of unrelatable. Sourcing is also different to an extent, especially in countries with hotter climates. They tend to have far more garage or garage if you're from over there. Sales, whereas we don't really here in the UK because it's chucking it down most of the time. But generally, yeah, even the items that sell are very different. So I did think it was important to bring a reselling podcast to the UK and just put in my two cents, really. So I'll be completely honest, I'm a full-time reseller. I do all right out of it, but I'm still got a hell of a lot to learn. I'm well aware of that. So this podcast will be partly for my own benefit, but I'm hoping that that will benefit other resellers in a similar position, people who are just starting out, just to get the idea of what sort of questions resellers should be asking. So on the subject of questions, we will be going over lots of tips and tricks in some of these episodes, but ideally as well, we will be speaking to other resellers here in the UK just to get a good idea of how they do things differently. So I do things my way and try and listen to what other people do as well. But there'll be someone down the road who does a similar thing, but completely differently. They may source from somewhere else. They may sell on different platforms or sell in a slightly different way. And it's really important to learn these new things just to see if you can implement them into your business or, selfishly, my business, and see if it can help you out. So that's a brief overview of what you've got to come in the next few episodes. But for today, I thought I'd sort of start off in a relatively sort of contextual manner, in sort of, I wouldn't say we're post-COVID at all, but we're a good few months into the whole COVID pandemic now. Things are perhaps starting to settle down a bit, but there's speak of another outbreak. There even are some localized outbreaks, and that's really infected reselling. I feel like we've got a good understanding of how things have changed for resellers now, and I think a lot of these temporary measures will stay. It's just my guess, but it's opened up different areas of the market massively. It's changed certain aspects of reselling. Obviously, you couldn't go sourcing in charity shops full stop while they were closed, and those have, you know, reopened, but stock is slightly different. You can't donate to them as much anymore, for example, because everyone's wanting to do it. So I'll work through some of the sourcing areas in the UK that I use. I'm not necessarily going to name specific locations, because not just for selfish reasons, but I do really think it's important to find your own exact locations and sources and people to talk to. You learn better that way. Even when I've seen people that have been handed, you know, great opportunities to them on the plate, and I've had this myself, I've just ignored it because it wasn't at the right sort of stage of my reselling path, if you call it that. I didn't appreciate the sort of value of them. So I'm not going to be giving out specific auction names or charity shops or best locations, but I'll give you a good idea to how to find them to yourself. And also, even if I told you exactly where I sourced my stock from and gave you phone numbers, it's probably not going to work for your business. It might not work for your lifestyle. I have quite an odd lifestyle and it gives me a relative amount of freedom, but I also have a 3-year-old daughter, so you know, I've got to take that into account. I can't go off for days on end sourcing overseas or anything like that. So, starting from the top of the list, one of the big ones, which I got started off in really, was car boot sales. Obviously, they've been closed for a long time, but in the past maybe month, just over, they've opened up again with restrictions. I think a few people have still held off going because some of the more inner city ones, for example, I went to one in Liverpool just by chance because I was there the other day, really busy, and you know, no one's really caring about social distancing in any fact or manner. But the brunt of it is car boot sales are great places to go and source. They're incredibly cheap generally. Other good points about them, although there are a lot of traders there and sort of house clearance guys, which you can still, you know, make good deals out of, there are a lot of families that are just clearing out the stuff and they just want it gone and they don't really care what price they get for it a lot of the time, or they'll undervalue the things a lot. So it just brings a lot of good opportunities that you wouldn't get in charity shops. Compare that into charity shops, which I'll talk about in more detail later. You know, they're going to be sourcing things, or taking in donations, sifting through, and the expensive stuff will go straight on eBay for the bulk of charity shop branches. It makes sense. Why wouldn't they? Can't blame them. I'd do the same. So you've got to appreciate that things that are generally on their shelves, especially like really specialist stuff, what is the point in putting a specialist piece of machinery that, you know, only a few hundred people in the UK use out on a shelf in a quiet high street charity shop? There's no point. They're just going to whack it onto eBay where they can reach the people who want to buy it and it'll sell for a premium. So you're less likely to find, for example, specialist kit in charity shops for that reason. Compared to car boot sales, a lot of the time, you know, this is very stereotypical, but someone's wife might have been going out on at them to sort out the shed or the garage, clear out all that old machinery or whatever it is they've been hoarding in there for years. And I've done this myself, or I've been guilty of this. So you just go to a car boot sale and get it gone. So you do find specialist stuff at car boot sales a lot. And I'm mentioning specialist stuff because generally specialist stuff sells for a lot of money. Does depend exactly what, but I find this with books as well. Obviously mass market paperback books don't sell for very much, but if you find a very specialist book about a very particular thing, some examples are, you know, historic poetry or manuals on using old machinery, things like that. They can go for a lot because there's not many printed, only a few people want them, but they're required for some expensive hobby or industrial business use. So a general strategy that I'd have, if you can call it that, for a car boot, and I'm kind of annoyed that it's ended up like this, but it is what it is. You've really got to get there early. I know people do it, but I'm not one for pestering the sellers before they've even started getting out of the car. You will find that if you go and sell at a car boot yourself, you'll drive in, and at the gates there'll be resellers knocking on your window asking if you've got any, you know, PlayStation games, any gold, vinyl, things like that. So generally they're all gone. If a car boot starts at 7, they're generally gone by 6:30 because the resellers have got in, made a bit of a fake stall to sell all the stuff that they can't sell on eBay, and they've just gone around asking all the other sellers and getting all the good stuff. So you can sort of spin that on its head and listen to what these resellers are wanting to buy, and you can learn from that, and you're unlikely to find stuff because they probably already got it before you. But let's say things like vinyl records, PlayStation games, gold, silver, etc. spin that on its head, go against the grain, think, right, well, if all the resellers are trying to buy all this stuff, I'm not even going to bother trying to compete with that. It's generally what I do anyway. Think about what they're not going for, what's not so much the easy targets. You know, I choose books because they're really unsexy and no one really tends to bother with them. Certain specialist kit, which people sort of don't look at because they don't know what it is, but you know, Google's your friend, you can find anything out these days. And take the example the other day at Liverpool where it was really busy. I got there about 11 o'clock because I wasn't planning on going to a car boot sale. All of the usual stuff like Lego, PlayStation games, etc. was just gone. There was a few people that were holding out for higher prices, and a good tip is to sort of go back to them towards the end of the day and just haggle them down because they just want to go home by then. They've been there since 6 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, there was none of that normal stuff left. I didn't really have so much time the other day in Liverpool because I wanted to do other things whilst I was there. But the things I would have been looking out for would have been specialist collectible books. I would have gone around if I wanted to and, you know, haggled for the popular stuff that people were holding out for higher prices for, because they will have been bored by then, getting cold and tired, etc. But really go rooting, look under the tables, see what's at the bottom of the boxes. If there's faulty items, for example, that resellers haven't bought because they're faulty, you know, faulty electronics, they still sell really well, especially like audio equipment, for example, some of the older preamps, amplifiers, etc. Even for spares and repairs, they go for good money. And if you've got a bit of time and, you know, you're interested in it, you can just get Google open and figure out how to repair it yourself. Obviously, certain things you might have to be certified for, or, you know, probably you should be pat testing stuff. But there are things you can do, things you can fix up and buy cheap and sell for good money. You know, I do that with laptops. So that's probably about it for car boots. I really like them. They're good fun. Don't rely on them anymore. But they're good for buying bulky items that charity shops don't tend to stock because they're usually limited on space in small high streets. You might not want to sell bulky items if you don't want to ship them. But you know, that's another advantage as well. Not many other resellers can be bothered shipping bulky items. They just want the easy stuff, PlayStation games, little packets of gold necklaces, which you can just shove in a letter-sized envelope and, you know, pay very little for it, take up less storage. But if you've got a big garage and you want to fill it with expensive stock, get looking for, you know, vintage furniture pieces. I think George Ross is a good one for that. If you watch any of his stuff, it's not really my cup of tea. Vintage furniture, because I don't really know much about it, and I've not got a very good eye for, you know, what's in fashion, but he does, so take a look at that. So next up, I've already spoke about them a bit, but charity shops. These can be brilliant, can be rubbish. Generally, people, I'll try and keep it relatively COVID and recently focused. Generally, people have found that charity shops haven't been so good recently. I don't really know why that is. They're getting tons of stock from, you know, people were clearing out during COVID. Almost all of them, in fact, around here anyway. I live just near Macclesfield. Almost all of them have limited their donation days. Some of them are not taking donations at all just because they've not got the space for it. But on the flip side to that, a lot of them appreciate the fact that they're getting tons of donations, stuff that they wouldn't usually get, and they are recruiting volunteers and team members as eBay sellers and eBay listing managers or whatever. So I'd say with charity shops, my general feeling is both ends are, you know, what's coming into them and what's going out of them has just gone up massively. Not always in value, just the quantity of it. So sort of bear that in mind. The sort of stock you get from charity shops, books again are good. They don't always value them very well. Places like Oxfam will overvalue a lot of books massively. But you know, a lot of the independent ones, you know, like the animal shelter type places, they'll be really good value. They get so many books that they just need them gone for 10-20p sometimes. Electronics are good at charity shops, especially relatively specialist stuff, you know, VHS recorder, DVD combos. What have I had from there recently? Projectors, like old-fashioned projectors, all sorts. they're just good fun. I do find they're generally hit and miss. They are very dependent on the area that you go to. If you go to like upscale areas or upmarket areas, should you say, this place called Oldley Edge near me where all footballers live, and the charity shops there are ridiculous. I tried them out once, and yeah, you can probably find some gems in there, but things are just sky high prices. And if you're the manager of a chain of charity shops and you've got a shop, that's in a very wealthy area, like, you know for a fact that you're going to bump up those prices. You also know for a fact that you're going to be getting a load of valuable goods, so you're going to pay special attention to the store stuff that goes into them. You're going to know all of the high-end clothing brand names, for example, because you're getting donated them on a regular basis. Whereas if you go to, you know, not as wealthy areas, sometimes that's not necessarily the case. They're just used to handling, you know, Primark clothes, Tesco clothes, or whatever cheaper clothes there are about there. So sometimes more valuable suits and shirts can just slip through the net, and they'll just get priced at a few pounds, and away you go, you've got a £50 shirt. So yeah, I'll try not to talk about, you know, what sort of things to buy specifically. I have bought clothes in the past, selling clothes at the moment actually. Charity shops are good for it, but I would say clothes are just, like I say, incredibly dependent on the location. You do tend to find some PlayStation games, you know, console games, computer games in charity shops. The best ones are where they price them the same as the DVDs, which are generally very cheap because no one buys DVDs anymore. But I have noticed that a lot of the big name charity shop branches and brands, they never have any decent games in. I have a feeling that's because, you know, they've already sold them off on eBay or scanned them into media buyers like Music Magpie and such, which is annoying. But oh well, you know, they usually just have the FIFA 05s knocking about, or all the types of games that nobody really wants. Generally a sports game that's got a date on it, like FIFA 2010, etc. They're just worthless. They've totally gone out of fashion by the year the next one's come out. So yeah, keep an eye on charity shops. A lot of them are still closed, in fact. But they've got such a big backlog of things to sell that it is worth asking, you know, behind the counter, have they got such and such, if you're looking to buy certain types of things, you know, big bits of furniture, for example, vintage furniture. They might have that, but just not in the shop. They might have a warehouse or something around the back where, you know, they only bring a couple of things out. And if they can sell things without even having to put it into the front of the shop, that's a win-win for them. So worth bearing in mind as well, you know, how does it work for both of you? They're not going to be too happy if you just go in there saying, yeah, I'm an eBay reseller, what have you got that can make me money? Because they're just going to try and sell it themselves, generally, unless they're not too bothered about making money for the charity. But do be honest. If they ask, you know, you're a reseller, but you want to help them as well, how can you help clear space for them and get stuff that, you know, can make you money as well? And the big one for charity shops is space. So bear that in mind. So one that I've used off and on, but I get bored of looking and my eyes hurt after a while, is Facebook Marketplace. It's great for buying stuff on. You do have to be pretty quick because it's easy to use. You know, everyone else is sat on there refreshing Facebook Marketplace feed all day, every day, especially people who are in, you know, a dull full-time employment and they're just sat at an office refreshing that. It's fastest finger first. I see stuff that comes up on there, you know, with £200-300 of profit in there almost every day, especially old hi-fi units, amplifiers and things, gaming bundles, all sorts of big job lots, house clearance type stuff. It's great, but it is fastest finger first. You have to be prepared as well to travel some distance, but then bear in mind how long you spent traveling there, the cost to get there. After you've considered all that, is it worth selling this item after you've sold it with the fees and the postage costs? That was a mistake that I used to make, although I think I did have a job when I first started, perhaps. So it wasn't too much of a problem, and I really enjoyed myself, but I'd drive for miles and miles and miles to buy like some toys or something that I'd make £5 profit on, but I'd spend 2 hours out driving. But it was good fun, at least, to make that profit, and it was nice to know that there's theoretical profit out there. Obviously, the closer to home, the better. I really have to watch it nowadays, and it really has to be worth it for me to go out and travel. Not because I'm being snobby, but like right now, for example, I'm doing a podcast sat at home and I have a ton of things to ship before the end of the day. And if I go out and spend 2 hours sourcing stuff, even though I've got loads of stock at the unit already, then I'm probably going to be late on my shipping, unhappy customers, Amazon might get, you know, annoyed with me. They do that. They give you warnings, suspend your account if you're late shipping stuff. So yeah, I've got those things to consider. But yeah, you should just consider those things too, especially going forward. You know, start your business if you are starting now, as you mean to go on. Don't get into the habit of driving the other side of the country for a fiver profit. And that goes for everything. Just get into good habits now, and then it won't be strange when you know, come to make a living out of it and you've got to change how you do things. Because if you're still operating in that sort of small mindset and small logistical sense, it's just not going to work if you want to improve things. So my last note really is to get out there and talk. Don't be ashamed the fact that you're a reseller. The more people you tell, the more people know and will try and sell good stuff to you, often just give you stuff. I get it all the time with friends and family. I have charity shops that talk to each other and, you know, pass my details around, and it's worked out great for me. So on that note, I'll see you in the next podcast. If you've got any questions, please feel free to ask them in the comments below. Find me on social media. My name's Lawrence Stanley, and I'll happily answer anything. I'll try and put some of the details or my details in the podcast description. And until next time, I'll see you soon.